Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line Podcast Network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now. This is the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast.
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Stop by 9390 Rogers Avenue for the best liquor, beer, and wine deals in the River Valley.
Arkansas wins the national championship!
Check out Eastside Liquor on Facebook for weekly specials.
Say goodbye! Darren McFadden, 80 yards, touchdown!
Do you want to watch the Morning Rush, Halftime, Even, Ruskin, and Zach? Find our live video stream on Facebook, YouTube, X, Instagram, and Twitch. ESPN Arkansas, more than just radio.
Chuck, I got the LSU-Georgia game on for the first game of the SEC tournament, and the defining characteristic of Hoover came out. Georgia flies out to the warning track at center field, 405 feet away. It'd be a home run just about every other ballpark in the SEC, just not where they play their tournament.
You know, that was always the one thing about Hoover that is striking when you walk into the ballpark. I mean, it's visibly different. And the thing is, it's actually been brought in a little bit from where it was some years back. I can remember walking in there the first time, and it's like, the outfield was just humongous, and it seemed like every fly ball that was hit was caught by somebody.
Well, you know, one of the things about this park, it's like a defining thing about the Hoover Met is that everybody knows I don't know if everybody, but people of my age and you and Matt, I mean, we all know this is where Michael Jordan played for the Birmingham Barons. It's like, you know, the defining thing about this baseball park is that the most famous basketball player ever played here, too.
Well, he did. And, when Arkansas played Alabama there in 1999 in the tournament championship game, that was the largest crowd to ever watch a game there other than Jordan's final game before he was called up. Mm. And, they've played that tournament there so long. They've gone through the live ball era, the dead bat era, back to the live, the dead. I mean, it's just gone back and forth. Zach Cox, those of us who are old enough to remember, hit a home run literally off the top of the scoreboard in right center field, and that's like in the next county. But I've also been there in years when, like, you'd go five games and there might be one home run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been it's been a constant since 1996. And I don't know when they moved the fences in. You may know, but it's been a while, I guess, now.
I think they moved them in.
But it's big.
It was 9 or 10 years ago, and it's still big. Yeah. I think they moved it in the second year I've been doing these games.
Okay.
You know, there's teams that have a lot to play for. LSU's got a lot to play for here in terms of trying to get some seeding. You get, I think it's 6 teams or 5 teams with 13 SEC wins. You know, for teams that are the top 4 seeds and maybe even Georgia, you're looking at a top 8 right now. There's not much you can do to get a better seed or anything. So what's at stake for Arkansas this week in your mind?
Well, I do think you want to solidify yourself as one of the top 8 teams in the country. And I don't mean to suggest that they're on the outside looking in. I don't think they are. But I do think you'd like to go down there and not fall on your face. And by that, I mean, go down there and have a bad showing where you kick it around. You might lose 1-0 tomorrow. Who knows? That doesn't mean you played a bad game. Now, if you lose 9-6 and you've made 4 errors, in my mind, that's a bad game. And you've walked a bunch of guys. You don't want to do that. But I think more than anything, you just want to play good baseball. You want to play winning baseball. You know this better than I do, and I'm asking, or wondering, I guess, would be the better way to put it. If Gage Wood's going to be a starter for you next weekend, do you start him, early in the week this week? How do you work that? How do you work Tiger? Are you bringing him back? Molina? There's a lot of interesting things there from an Arkansas perspective. So maybe just figuring out what you're going to do with your starting pitching the following week might be one thing to look for.
Yeah, Chuck, that's kind of what I was wondering. Who is our number two? If you're like, man, we know we got a number one in Hagan Smith, but who do you trust? Do you trust Molina or do you think Gage would? Because I like Molina. I like him even coming out anytime in the game. And Wood, you know, he's been a closer as well. But who is our second pitcher that you like?
Well, I think all of them at times this year have been good. I think baseball is one of those games where as a hitter and as a pitcher, I mean, sometimes things get in your head, and I'm sure it was this way too, playing football and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get so much stuff going on in your head, and all of a sudden you can't do anything. And but sometimes, you know, taking an exhale, so to speak, like what they did with Molina, you know, in the short term, and what they are apparently doing longer term with Tiger. Sometimes when they come back, they're pretty good. And there are lots of different ways. I think I was reading somebody's article in the paper, and I apologize. I don't remember whose it was. But it was quoting Hobbs, pitching coach, and he talked about how there are lots of different ways to win when you get into tournament play. And some of the things that you've done in the regular season that worked in the regular season may have run their course, may not work anymore. You may have different pieces to the puzzle, so to speak. Lots of things may have changed. So I wouldn't be alarmed by the fact that the starting pitching's not as settled, provided the starters you do send out there, like Wood the other day, and when you do bring these guys out of the bullpen, like you did Molina the other day, that you get good performances out of them. You know, that's ultimately what matters most. But you know, it's been nice all year long to know games 1, 2, and 3 in a weekend series who your starters were going to be. You know, we've hit a point in the season right now where we may not be as certain as we were before, but it's not like the options behind them are lousy.
No, that's all true. And that's interesting the way that Matt put that about, you know, and tournament play is way different. I mean, look, we're playing on a Tuesday. These are SEC games. This could help decide a season for a team on a Tuesday. You know, they do everything they try to avoid playing on this day. And then on a Wednesday, they got to play on a Thursday. And tournaments are just a lot different than the regular season in baseball. You know, in terms of the days that you're playing against your opponents and just the whole day itself. I mean, I guess it's the same for basketball. It's just a day of a tournament always feels a lot different than a regular season. But I just don't think there's any pressure on them to win. You know, the outcome in these games, just it feels a little bit secondary to just trying to, like you said, play well. You don't always win when you play well, but that's a habit that you want to keep up. And so I can agree with that. Playing well is like, it's a simple thing to say, it's a difficult thing to pull off, but the teams that, you know, have won 43 and lost 11, they're really good at playing well on a routine basis.
Well, and you know, specifically, if you want to get into specifics, don't walk guys. You know, regardless of who you pitch, don't walk guys. Don't put a lot of guys on base where a little cheap single to right field costs you 2 runs. You field it at a 982 fielding percentage or thereabouts most of the season. Don't have a game where you throw it away. Don't have a game where you kick it around and your shortstop throws it into the front row. Don't have a game like that. Don't throw to the wrong base. Don't turn the game with a bad play in the outfield. Those are all, you know, a little bit more specific than playing well, but you've got to do all those things if you're going to get to Omaha. You're not going to win out of the first weekend. You're not going to get out of the first weekend if you don't do those things well. So you need to do those things well this week.
Did you see about this double first base that they're using? Matt, they're using a double first base now for this tournament only, in which there's 2 first base, one that's green and foul territory that's supposed to be for the runner, and the white base, which is part of fair territory, that is for the fielder. They haven't done this in the regular season.
Has it been an issue in the past?
Or? Well, you get some moments where feet can get tangled up.
The thing that
scares, is it just a suggestion, or are they making a call off of that?
They're doing. They're using this double first base for this tournament, for the entire tournament. It's not being used. It hadn't been used for the regular season. And they're not using it for the NCAA tournament. It's just for the SEC tournament.
The ball's thrown, the first baseman's thrown off the base a little bit. It has to go to the other side of the base. Does he have to get his foot back to the right color now? Because that now, mm-hmm. now you're opening up a whole other thing.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. You know, this is something that they have to learn like on the fly almost. I actually don't mind the double first base. I just don't like it. I don't like it just
for the championship.
For this tournament. Yeah. It just feels
here's the thing though, Phil. Let's say you've got a breaking ball in the dirt, ball's rolling up the first base side. Catcher's going to get the ball. Runner's taking off to first base. How many times do you see the first baseman catch the ball? Mm-hmm. As he's stepping across the bag.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, your proper footwork is, you know, the proper way to do it is to do that when your catcher's throwing from foul territory over there. You catch the ball stepping across the bag into foul ground. You're saying that if you don't put your foot on the correct side of the bag, that the umpire's going to make a call off of that?
Now, reading the rule about this, the one time where you can switch is on exactly the play that you just described.
Okay. All right.
But this is where there's going to be confusion, because it's the idea of what colored base is the runner drawn towards. So it's like it's his decision. I'm either going for the green or I'm going for the white on a drop third strike. And if he goes for the white, then the first baseman has to go to the green. If the runner goes to the green, then the first baseman has to go to the white.
Great as a guide.
Right.
But look, if the runner's hit by the throw, then it's up to the umpire to determine which color he was running towards. I get mm-hmm. that. But it's when you start stepping across the bag to take an errant throw from a third baseman or a catcher in a different situation, or you know, lots of times first baseman, you know, you'll catch a ball on the inside part of the bag based on the throw. I hope they don't call those plays like that, but I get what they're saying about what your target is as a runner.
Yeah, and again, I actually like this rule. I like this for certain safety purposes. It just, you know, we've played like 56 games already, and now all of a sudden in this little oasis of a tournament this week, they're playing with an extra set of the base and then not doing it again. So, like, I would just like to see the same rules throughout the entire season and then figure out what you're going to do for next year. That's all.
This has been a part of – this play's been a part of baseball for over 100 years.
Yep.
I mean, you know –
and I thought they just enlarged the bags.
Test it out this week in Hoover. We're going to test it out this week.
I thought didn't they enlarge?
That's just big league baseball.
Okay.
And the minors,
okay.
Not college ball. Maybe that's eventually where they go. So I think I'd like to see college baseball mirror what the guys are going to eventually play in pro ball. So I think there'll be some more rules that come down the pike. Maybe larger bases are part of it.
The Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa has everything you want for your next getaway. With the luxury and hospitality of a grand old Southern hotel, the accommodations are sure to please everyone. Visit our thermal water bathhouse for mineral water baths and massages, or enjoy one of our many dining options, like our Friday night seafood buffet, primetime in a fountain room every Saturday night, or our award-winning Sunday brunch. Located in downtown Hot Springs, the Arlington is steps away from shopping, entertainment, Bathhouse Row, and the hiking and biking trails of the National Park. Visit arlingtonhotel.com for more info.
Bet Online is your number one source for all summer sports, from Major League Baseball, golf, to the NBA and NHL playoff stats. They've got all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts.
Sounds like we're doing All Stones today, MJ. What's the purpose for All Stones? Just kind of feeling and rolling stones today?
Yeah, you know, we get Chuck on every once in a while, and I could go a little throwback, maybe something, get his vibe going good. And what's not wrong with the Rolling Stones? I mean, I'm a Rolling Stones fan.
Chuck,
I am too.
Yeah. You got a favorite Stones song or two that you could throw out there?
Well, I mean, can't get no satisfaction. It's mm-hmm. like Anthem for a Generation, mm-hmm. man. And Angie's maybe the greatest slow dance song of all time.
There we go.
So Sympathy for the Devil is a good one. And I like a lot of Stones tunes.
What was the first one you played, Phil? You played the first one today. I didn't hear you.
Can't you hear me coming?
Can't you hear me knocking?
Can't
that you hear me
one knocking? One of my walk-up songs. Yeah, that one I've always loved. Start Me Up.
Give Me Shelter. Song. Yeah.
And I've always loved Bitch. Those would be the three. And it's just like saying.
See, I always think Elton John when I think that song. But maybe his is The Bitch Is Back. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That maybe we can do Elton John at some point, too. Chuck, your Knicks took one on the chin, but they couldn't have been a surprise. Just the fact that they got to Game 7 in the semifinals of their of the division of the conference. I don't know how they even got there. It was like they had to be duct taped together just to play in this last series.
Yeah, I was hoping, but you could tell going in that they were just beaten up. And I don't know exactly when they say Brunson broke his hand. I didn't think he looked right from the beginning of the game. And, you know, Josh Hart had that abdominal strain. And, you know, I've never had one of those, but I've heard athletes say that that's one of the hardest injuries to play through. And, Matt, you may know something about that. I don't know, but you could tell every time he moved that he was in pain. And, hey, they gave it a great shot. Fun year. Ran out of gas.
I was thinking that, you know, already they're thinking next year, and you're wondering who's going to be in free agency. But you look at a guy like Pascal Siakam. He's the other big with Tyrese Haliburton. He was at Toronto when they won, and he's at Indiana now. And Julius Randle's hurt, but I like some Julius Randle's when he's healthy. And you're looking back, I like the Knicks going forward for next year. And Chuck, another thing, when Josh Hart was playing 48, 46 minutes a game, when he goes down, that's a guy that you used to, man, you know, you're penciling him in. Then all of a sudden you got to try to find somebody to take over those minutes. The Knicks just had, man, it was just an uphill battle.
Yeah, it was just, you know, when they got there to the end and they were in the physical condition they were. We forget about, you know, the center, Robinson, that was out. And what is it, Bogdanovich, the player they acquired. That may be the film director, I forget. But they acquired this guy at the trade deadline, and he was playing well for him, but he got hurt. And so they've just had a lot of guys go down. And of course, they, you know, played a lot of the year without Randle, but you know, I think with everybody healthy, they've got a team that can, you know, be in the hunt again next year.
Chuck, Matt introduced a sports phrase to me. We were talking about the Celtics and the Pacers series. I'd never heard this before. I figured it out when he told me what it was. Maybe you've heard this. Gentlemen sweep. Do you know what that means?
Is that a five-gamer?
There you go.
Exactly. I've not heard of this before. Yeah. I figured it out because the gentleman would let you win.
Yeah, I think I'd heard that a time or two. Yeah.
It would be two games on your home court, two games on their home court. And so they would win one of those. Then you'd come back for that game five at your home court. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know if it's still how they do the series, if it's 2-3-2.
I think in the finals, don't they still do 2-3-2 in the finals?
Chuck, every year.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I don't remember. I don't pay that. Hey, I pay attention when the Knicks are in there, and it's been so long that I don't know the format for the finals.
Well, I do want to ask you a question about how, so when we watch basketball and you, even with Coach Muss was here, and you see this when the playoffs get here, they cut the rotation down a little bit. How do you think DVH is going to do that? And do you think he does that in this SEC tournament? Or when we get to regionals, it's, man, when Hagan Smith goes out there, you're not taking him out unless he gives you a reason to take him out, right? He's going to go 8-9 innings for you.
Well, I think they'll go as far as they reasonably feel like, you know, they can take him. Each game dictates that. You're also accepting responsibility for the arm care of a guy who's got a chance to pitch in the big leagues for a long, long time. So all those things have got to be balanced. I do think that, you know, when you look at position players particularly, I think who's pitching can affect who you put out there. I think situations can affect who you have out there defensively. I think matchups can dictate who's in your starting lineup and who may be a guy that's a late-inning replacement. I think that goes for maybe, you know, a couple of, you know, two or three spots. Maybe not any more than that. But I think you've got to I think you've just got to continue to coach and manage in a similar fashion. I don't think you make it more, you know, I don't think you alter a lot of what you do if you can avoid it. Now, it doesn't mean you keep playing guys that aren't producing. But I think ideally you're you know, you're in a more condensed setting, and so you got to be aware of that. But your best players are still your best players.
Well, that's
your best player is Hagan Smith. He's your best pitcher. He's your best player. He's the most amazing weapon that this team has. But you can only use him in I would think, one game in a weekend. And I do feel that there's I think there's even another gear for him. And it's not in terms of he can pitch better than how he's been pitching. It's that he can go longer. They've done this on purpose for the reason that you had stated, because you gotta be careful with somebody who's going to pitch in the big leagues for a long time. That is a responsibility of the college coach, and they've done that. Pardon me, but it's also I think they've been saving the bullets, so to speak, for June. And I do think that they'll let him go 115, 120 pitches. He's a big, strong kid, and I think he can take it's not a matter that he can take it or handle it. I think he's built for that right now. And it's not like he's been doing it all year. So I don't think it's even overuse to let him go out and throw 120 pitches a couple of times in June. If you're also right about if the situation warrants it. You don't just have to keep him out there if you get a nice lead. But if you're in a situation where you need him to make some pitches, I'm going to tell you, I think he can make those pitches seventh, eighth, even ninth innings.
All right, let me ask you this, because I wondered this the other night when they were playing A&M in that nothing-nothing ball game, that close game. Do you work him longer? If you have an almost identical game in the NCAA tournament, which you probably will, at least at some point, at least there's a chance you will. I shouldn't say probably. Do you leave him in? You let him go nine? Leave him in another 15 pitches?
You let him go. I think at that point after six, you see, like, all right, let's see how he looks in the seventh inning. And if he looks good in the seventh inning, all right, let's see how he looks in the eighth inning.
Right.
It's like, you know, last five pitches were faster than the first five. Remember the scouting report on Nuke Lelouch. He's throwing like that right now. I don't think you plan on him going nine innings. It's just the kid can do it. I'm pretty sure.
Well, nine might be an overstatement, but a guy who could throw, as you say, 120, 125 pitches.
But you do have to be careful too, because look, I mean, whoever drafts him in the next 6 or 7 weeks, or in the middle of July when it happens, they'll have to resist. It depends on who the team is, because he's ready to pitch in the big leagues now. Skeens could have gone to pitch for the Pirates last year. They just, you know, they weren't going to be foolish like that. You know, I watched Paul Skeens throw 6 no hit innings against the Cubs last week. He was pitching in a regular season SEC game last year. Hagan Smith could pitch in the big leagues right now, and I think in less than a year he will be.
I'd agree with that. Somebody made the point the other day I was listening, might have been Kyle Peterson, saying that, you know, if someone like Smith, someone that good, you know, say you get taken by someone who finds themselves in the hunt, you know, for a wild card spot, someone like that might could help you, you know, before this season's over. Here's the thing that I wonder about Smith, and I'm glad to hear you say what you just said, because every time I watched Paul Skeens pitch last year, it looked to me like he could have thrown 150 pitches if they'd ask him. Yeah. With ease. I mean, they'd wanted 175, fine. Sometimes with Smith, I don't know, because we've not been, and I'm not saying 175, but I'm saying we've not seen him have one of those games where you say to yourself, man, Hagan Smith's just gutting it out right now. I think you're going to have a game or two like that to win the national championship. And I've thought that all along. I mean, I don't know. And I hope you're right. I mean, that's the thing that I think it's going to have to happen. I think there's going to have to be a game somewhere where you extend him way beyond perhaps where you have and where you would on a normal Friday night.
Yeah.
And that might mean fewer strikeouts during the game,
which would be okay. And I think the coaching staff
might mean pitching to contact a little more.
I think Matt and Dave have viewed it that way from the start of the season. I really do.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift, selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
Hickey & Hole Law Partners are now here for you and all your legal needs in Mena and the Little Rock area. Hickey & Hole Law Partners, specializing in divorce, custody case, civil litigations, and more. Having over 7 decades of combined experience to better serve you and the community you live in. Please visit kevinhickeylaw.com or call us at 479-434-2414 for a consultation or come by an office nearest you. Things are about to get better.
I saw you had retweeted this I don't know what account this is from College Baseball Central. Everybody does all kinds of, you know, what this is what the postseason's going to look like, and they lay out all the matchups and everything. And this guy, Micah Butel, put together a postseason structure that would make Alyssa's head explode. Matt, listen to this.
Yeah.
Scott, Florida State hosting Florida and being in the same cross bracket from the Fayetteville Regional. So you've already dealt with dealt with Arkansas and Florida State in a College World Series game in 2019.
Yes.
But a regional with Florida State, man, you got to hope that happens, right? Or no?
Well, I'm not really worried about the Gators because FSU already beat them 3 times this year, but I don't love it. I'd rather avoid it.
What about Arkansas, though? I mean, they are.
I can't do that. That's too much. And it's kind of like, yeah, you know, not to go on a little soapbox, but FSU softball is going to Oklahoma's regional, super regional, which means you're not going to have Florida State and Oklahoma in the Women's College World Series. And, like, I hate that. And so it's like, man, I want both teams to get there separately on different paths and not cross until the championship series if it comes to that. But I don't know if it's really going to happen, but I don't think I don't like it one bit at all, actually.
Hey, you mentioned softball. What happened in the Fayetteville Regional? And not just what happened on the field, but in the stands. It's just you saw the photos of it, and it just didn't look like it was as highly attended as I guess I expect, because I remember the crowds from the regional last year and the super regional 2 years ago. I mean, this is a sport that's been on the rise, but I guess last weekend it didn't really feel like that.
Yeah, I think there might have been more people there than it looked on television. But Arkansas's game started 55 minutes after it was supposed to on Friday, and so maybe that late time had something to do with it. It was hot on Saturday. It was really, really hot. And that might have deterred some people as well. You've also got graduations happening. There's a lot going on, not to try to make excuses. But it was not the crowd that it has been the past couple of super regionals and regionals that we've seen with Arkansas. And you go back to 2021 and just how exciting that atmosphere felt. I mean, there was still a good crowd there, but it wasn't the same. And then, you know, on the field, they hobbled in like they did the year before, and you're not hitting well. You've got an Arizona team, which was impressive from the get go when they run ruled Villanova to start off the regional. They even, you know, the way that they were hitting the ball against Arkansas, even though it was still just a 2-1 game, making solid contact as opposed to the Razorbacks, who only got on the board because of Rylan Hedgecock home run. So, they just didn't have the offensive gunpowder that they had in the middle of the year. And so, you know, I hated to see it end, but I also wasn't shocked because of how they were coming into the regional.
Yeah, going speaking of this Arkansas baseball team, and Phil and I, we were kind of talking about it earlier. You know, your players that you rely on, I mean, your stars, they have to play big if you're going to survive and advance. Who's a couple role players? You know, can Kendall Diggs, can he snap out of it? Do you think he can be? And what you want, and honestly, you just want him to be more consistent. Is he one guy that you just kind of have your, you know, Jared Sprague lot? I mean, is there who's a couple guys that you're like, man, if we can just get them a little bit over the hump, you could see us having success this year?
Well, Matt, I think Kendall is the guy. I mean, I know that there's eight other people in the lineup, but at the end of the day, you got to get a guy like Kendall Diggs going again because he brings such firepower, and he was Mr. Clutch for so long that he's got to be that guy again. You want more consistency from Peyton Stovall. You're starting to see Hudson White come along. But I think the freshman Ryder Helfrich is a guy as a DH too that you want to see start to get some hits. And you know, if you've got Hudson White playing behind the plate, that DH spot with Ryder Helfrich could be really, really important. Nolan Souza is a guy who can step in there and be that DH as well, now that it looks like Peyton Holt's going to be playing in the outfield. But your guys like Ben McLaughlin and Peyton Stovall and Kendall Diggs, they're going to have to really help carry the offense in the regionals. And Mike and I were talking about this yesterday. Once you get to the College World Series, and I'd really love Phil's input on this, pitching becomes a premium. And they've got the pitching to do it. They've got the staff to make a run because of the way that that ballpark plays. But before you get there, you really need the offense to get going. The good news is Arkansas hasn't lost back-to-back games at Razorback Baumwalker Stadium at all this year. And so it helps them if they're going to be a national host.
So just to play some devil's advocate here, last year's team won every series at Baumwalker Stadium until the Fayetteville region.
Yeah.
It's a different team, though, and understood. Yeah. A much different team. They had an ERA that was over 5.5 last year, and it's a lot different this season. And that's the reason, more than anything, that I feel like playing at home, they're in a sweet spot. They really are. They're in a sweet spot. They actually hit better than I think folks think at home. I don't see a team coming into Baum and winning two in a row over them. But yeah, I mean, you just never know when it comes to this thing, though, Alyssa. Who would have ever seen Tennessee losing two in a row to Notre Dame in 2022? We didn't think it would happen in 2021 against NC State. You never know. I mean, soon as you try to predict baseball, you're always showing reasons why you shouldn't do it.
Ole Miss was the last team in the field and then went on to win the College World Series 2 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly. I just think you want them to leave here with a good feeling about where they are pitching wise. Yep. Really, I mean, we focus so much on well, the bats have to do this, the bats have to do that. They've gotten to where they are based upon how good the pitching staff is, and it's been shaken up in the last couple of weeks. You know, I mean, we don't know what situation Brady Tiger will be brought into, whether now or in the postseason. We still don't know how they plan on utilizing Mason Molina.
Sure.
All we know right now, and really I think these are the only two, maybe three absolutes. Hagen Smith is the best pitcher in the country. You take that for what it's worth. Gabe Gackel maybe is the best freshman pitcher in the country, and they're going to count on him. And Christian Fouch has become somebody that I think you can really depend upon. You know, outside of that, there are some wild cards there.
Yeah, and you really want to see a guy like Will McIntyre turn it on, right? Like, the past couple of outings haven't been great for him at all. And so can a guy like Will McIntyre, who is an upperclassman on this staff, kind of turn it on like he has, and we've seen him in the past during the postseason, because they're going to need that from him, whatever his role may be. You got to have a guy like Will McIntyre coming in and pitching strikes.
Have you been to Hoover before? I know Pictorial Nation usually sends people. Yeah. You've been here before, right?
Oh, yes. No, I went a lot. When I was not the sports director, I actually was there. It might have been the last time I was there, though, was 2017, and I was pregnant with Finn. Because I remember walking around in that heat being pregnant, almost, you know, 7 months pregnant. And it's a fun place. I do enjoy it. I don't think I've been back since then.
I think it works great for this league. So many people be like, well, they need to move it to minor league stadiums, and then you know need to try to get it to a big league park and everything. And I just think that that sounds good. It probably would be fun, but I think it's a little more difficult to plan that kind of stuff in practice.
Yeah, I don't think you can hold up a whole major league park for a week.
Yeah, like the Big 12 tournament is ending on Saturday, you know, and I think that might be a reason why.
Yeah.
You know, they basically get to turn this into the league's own baseball park.
Right.
Not a lot of leagues get that.
Yeah, and they have full control over what they do and bring in and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, I like it. And I like having it at a centralized location. As much as it sounds fun to bounce it around, you know, there's something different about going to Hoover every year and going to Omaha every year and going to Oklahoma City every year. And it's, you know, Saul and I have even talked about, because we love Omaha so much, that it should just kind of maybe when the kids are a little bit older be a thing we do, whether Arkansas's in it or not, because it is just so fun to go up there for the College World Series. I mean, that's what that's about, is kind of making it a tradition and going. And there are people who make Hoover a tradition and they go to the SEC baseball tournament every year. And that's kind of what makes it fun.
Hey, Alyssa, we're 100 days away from Arkansas Razorback football season. What do you hope to see? What do you hope to learn? Is there anything over the summer workouts? We know who our starting quarterback is. Do we know who our offensive line is? Is there anything you want to learn before the two-a-days get here? I guess, what did that be, the last week of July or the first week of August when camp gets here?
Yeah, I believe it's going to be the first week in August.
Okay.
And, you know, for me, I really just would like no one to get hurt while they're out there running around doing all these 7-on-7 drills and what they do and the lifting and all that kind of stuff. Because I don't really know what you can find out or figure out in that kind of summer time period. I mean, what you would hope is that Taylen Green develops a really good chemistry with a lot of these wide receivers, and it looks like he's already kind of solidified that kind of chemistry and bond with the offensive line and those guys, so that's really cool to see. You know what's crazy, though, because I'm going to Paris for the Olympics, and when I come back on August 12th, I've got to have a mandatory 5 days off to just reacclimate. So I am not going to be back at work covering the Hogs again really until the season starts. So I'm going to have to play a lot of catch-up and do a lot of reading and listening to interviews in between now and then when I get back from Paris. It'll be fun.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
Eastside Liquor has every alcohol you need as we get close to summer. Green River Bourbon and Rye is flying off the shelves right now. Come check out the new Crystal Ridge Moonshine and Vodka, made right here in Hot Springs. Eastside Liquor, 9390 Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith.
We got the SEC baseball tournament starting today. LSU has just knocked off Georgia. It's a team that's getting a little bit hot going into the postseason. The Razorbacks will play tomorrow against the winner of the game that's about to start, Alabama and South Carolina. You know, this is Hoover's where they did the SEC football media days for years. They've held the baseball tournament here even longer. Have you made it to the SEC baseball tournament before, Bill? I know you're a college baseball guy.
Never have.
This is a good tournament. It's fun to watch on television as well.
Yeah.
I wonder what's at stake for a team like Arkansas. Not very much, but there's a lot at stake for a team like LSU that just got a victory. And you know, this is such an oddity where you figure a league sometimes can get 11 teams into the SEC tournament, and you just don't want anybody getting hurt here, because a league wants their teams to do well in the postseason, and a lot of people feel like this tournament doesn't mean very much.
It depends. If we were talking about it up here, if I'm Tennessee, I'd rather be out of there in a day or two days or whatever it is, and get home and be rested and be fresh, because you know you may be the top seed in the NCAA tournament whether you win a game or not. Just depends on what everybody else does, obviously. But I don't know if I see a benefit of grinding out a long bunch of games and burning down your roster when more important things are ahead. Tennessee went in there 2 years ago. They won the league out. They routed the league. They went 25-5, and then they won the SEC tournament, and they end up getting beat by Notre Dame. Now, I don't know if that, there's a correlation there or not. Might not be. It's several weeks later. I'd rather get home and get rested.
What would you do? How would you change this SEC tournament? Phil and I we kind of talked about different things, or I was, you know, do you put it at a different time of the year? How do you make this SEC tournament mean something instead of everybody just kind of showing up? And like you said, it'd be better off for Tennessee not to be there.
Well, same with the basketball. I used to just love, like I told you in the 90s, I took the show every year to the Georgia Dome to watch Nolan Richardson, to watch Rick Pitino, to watch those LSU teams, et cetera. And I just realized there's no correlation in winning that thing and how you're going to advance. I remember 1 year Kentucky had a fantastic season, early Pitino, and then they win the SEC tournament and they get knocked out in the second round by Marquette. I just don't know. I don't know any way you can make it more important to certain teams. And you know what? It's kind of a nice ecosystem because if you're Ole Miss, you're incredibly desperate, right? You may not, just because you got in the SEC tournament, you might not get in the NCAA tournament. So a team like that's got a lot to play for. LSU's got a lot to play for, you guys mentioned.
Yeah, they do. I think Vandy's got a lot to play for. I think Florida's got a lot to play for. It's the teams that are trying to get off the bubble that this tournament, I think, means right. more to. Because I think the national seed picture is pretty much wrapped up as far as that's concerned. But it's just, you know, it's a chance to go watch good games because that's what this is. I think it's the best collection of talent in all of college baseball for the year, and that's including the College World Series. It's just this league is so good.
After Todd Helton and before Tony Vitello, Tennessee Derby went to the SEC tournament. They were never there.
That's wild. I don't know how that could happen at a place like Tennessee because it's like Georgia. It's just an athletic department that's got so much talent around them. They should always be good in like almost every sport.
Yep.
Hey, what do you get on this Jaden Rashada story now that he is suing Billy Napier, the booster, and the former director of player engagement and NIL? It's kind of a wild story, and it's giving us a window into what recruiting is like now. But maybe in some cases, not in everybody's case, but in Rashada's case, it certainly was.
2-3 years ago, when we were peering into the future on the show, on my show, and we were making up what-ifs. One of them was, what's going to happen during the season someday when on Thursday, Friday, a team says, we're not playing. We're not happy. We're not playing. We don't like the payouts. And or what are we going to do when somebody's not happy and they sue? Or what are we going to do when the first story comes that the players don't understand taxes and the IRS is after them? Well, we're witnessing one of those right now in the lawsuit thing. And, guys, that's the future. We just took another step into the future is what just happened.
The suit seems to be about, I was promised something that I didn't get. But there's also potential, maybe even NCAA violations in there about contact with boosters on an official visit. But I mean, this is kind of a story that's been repeated for a long time. It's just that now that it's legal, now that the NIL money is legal in terms of the NCAA, is that where Rashada has a standing here? Do you think he's got a standing in this case?
Tough to say. I don't know the specifics. I was told that the $13 million number, as it was discussed and maybe as it was documented, was real. It was not some fantasy number like a lot of these are. Now, the legalese and all that and the boilerplate and all that and the language, I really don't know enough about. But my other question, guys, is this going to be a catalyst? Because there's tons of players out there saying they got promised something they never got, which I'm guessing is probably true. Is this going to be the catalyst for a firestorm of lawsuits?
Can this also be a catalyst to Florida finding a way maybe to get out of whatever a buyout they might have with Billy Napier? I mean, he's one of the coaches that we continuously wonder if he's going to even make it through the next football season.
Haven't thought about that yet, but yes, that is an option. That is a ploy, and it's an easy way to get out of a big buyout. And if this thing gets ugly, and we know these things drag on slowly, but if they're limping around, we already talked about, I believe last week, guys, how difficult that schedule is, which is probably going to be another catalyst for his exit. That might be a reason not to have to pay him. It's a good point.
I know there was a vote by the NCAA Board of Directors, which I guess partially is made up of the conference commissioners, or people who represent each conference. And yeah. There's some disagreement about this settlement to pay back damages. And I mean, just from reading it, the way that the smaller schools, the group of five schools, are sort of basing this around is that the Autonomy 5 schools, the power schools, are basically trying to strong arm the smaller leagues into paying a larger percentage than maybe they should. And this feels like a really big schism between two totally different sides of college sports. But this settlement is around the corner soon. I mean, it's just a matter of they got to figure out who's going to pay for it. And, of course, there's a fight over that.
The SEC and the Big Ten, for example, are going to be on the hook for about $30 million a year. Now, 22 of that is promised future salaries that come from the university where they pay them directly. And then the rest is back payments from former athletes. And then they're going to withdraw NCAA tournament money, too. So that money you never see, you just don't get it, right? It's not necessarily a check you write, but it's less money you're going to get. It's a myriad of things. Now, the Big East is mad. Val Ackerman, I think their league, their teams are going to be on the hook for about $7.5 million. She's saying that's too much. The problem is the power structure right now, which is the SEC and the Big Ten don't give a rip, and they don't care if they go away or die off or whatever. Not trying to be harsh, but I just mean as a program, they don't care. And they're tired of them having any type of say-so in anything. And I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of empathy here. However, it ends up.
Hey, Bill, I got a question. Can the kid play? Can Jaden Rashida, however you say his name, what can he actually play? Because he keeps going to spot to spot to spot. And you know, my thought is, well, if the kid can play, the other coach would want to keep him. What are your thoughts? Is he a guy that can play?
I'd say he's good. I was surprised Georgia took him in. It's not going to matter one way or another for Georgia.
They can afford to take that chance is what you're saying?
Correct. I was just surprised because they can sign one of the top. They've got maybe the top 26 quarterback committed right now who's about 15 minutes from me, Jared Curtis, who everybody in America wants, and he's right now finishing up his sophomore year in high school. He's committed to them. They can go get that same guy, five-star guy, every year. Now, I understand. What if Carson Beck goes down and you know, you get to the depth chart and he needs to play and he's got some ability and he played last year in Arizona. I understand all that. It's an insurance policy. I don't think, let me put it this way, guy. I'll answer it. I don't think he's a difference maker for them.
Did you see in the story? I wonder what this meeting must have been like. Rashida takes he takes the lawsuit or the 37 pages or whatever it is. Or he just tells Coach Kirby Smart, hey, I'm suing Billy Napier. And the story said he signed off on it and almost like gave his blessing to it. It's just rivalries on the field, rivalries in recruiting, and now in the courtroom, Bill.
And I totally get it, but I mean, if I'm Georgia, not that they're worried about Florida, but I would prefer Billy Napier to survive, right? I mean, Florida sure. State fans call me every day and say, I'm glad that they're suffering, but I don't want him gone.
Well, because the next coach is going to be a little better. we'll be
probably.
Better. Didn't Napier turn yeah. down a few jobs before to stay at Louisiana Lafayette? And it's like, this was the one he picked to take, and it just has blown up in his face.
I mean, that's a gold mine job. It's not he's not recruiting, even though they did have a pretty good run in recruiting. They signed a five-star quarterback, a five-star defensive lineman. They've done pretty well in the portal. Got to give them that. But they're not intaking talent like the Florida brand says you should.
Hey, go ahead, man.
I was going to say, I'm always surprised when Florida's not very good. Hey, Bill, I do want to ask you one more baseball question about this Arkansas base, the hitting the ball. I know pitching is where it's at, and they've changed a little bit. We had Gage Wood go. I like Molina, you know, who's going to be our number two. But how important is this timely hitting, Bill? Is it more mental than anything when we just keep leaving guy after guy on base?
There's a saying that you learn from T-ball. You guys probably remember hearing this. Hitting's contagious. Well, not hitting is contagious, too. But they never say that. It's always hitting is contagious. But the 180 of that is 100% accurate. And I'm not applying that to Arkansas. But you know what? Look, again, best ERA, fantastic staff, best pitcher in America. I think that's a blueprint for them to win it all. It's very, very possible. Now Tennessee has got what, the third best ERA in America. I don't even know if they've got a number one or number two pitcher. It's phenomenal the way they piece that together. I don't think they got a number one or number two legit, but they just rotate them in and it seems to fit and piece together. And they knock the bleep out of the ball. But I've had people tell me the worry from their standpoint, and I apply this to Arkansas on the flip side, is that let's say you hit a dry spot with those bats, which can happen to anybody, and then that pitching staff finally gets exposed. There's a lot of different ways this could go, but Arkansas, they're not going to trade what they've got. I wouldn't think.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Check out the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast at hitthatline.com.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.